I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to The Parenthood. One of the things parents fret about the most is sleep, or more specifically, the lack of it. Sleep deprivation becomes a very real thing, and parents finding themselves obsessing about how best to get their little ones to sleep as best they can. Because everything revolves around sleep. You get lots of it, everyone feels great, has more patience, more fun, and if you don't get enough, even the smallest challenge seems insurmountable. And because everyone's obsessed with sleep, everyone talks about it. And inevitably, you get conflicting advice. Well, I'm hoping today's guest will clear that up. Jenna Wilson is a professionally trained sleep consultant whose everyday work revolves around helping parents understand and resolve their children's sleep issues. Jenna, thank you for coming along today.
Thank you for having me.
You're the mother of three, still quite small children.
I am,
yes. Are they good sleepers?
They are, I'm afraid to say. Although I always think when people ask me that it'd be a bit rubbish if they weren't very good sleepers.
But do they start out good sleepers? Or was that something that you were surprised by?
I was very strict. I was quite strict in relation to their sleep. So from an early age, with all three of them, I made sure that they had a really good routine, that they were very well fed, and that we had a really good feeding and sleeping routine. Not extremely strict, but I definitely wanted to make sure that their awake times were right and that they knew how to get themselves to sleep as early as they possibly could.
Yeah. So I'd love to understand a little bit more about how a baby's sleep develops over their childhood, really, because actually it is a sort of ongoing thing, and sleep is such an important part of their existence, isn't it?
It really is. It is incredibly, it's just so important for every part of their growth, their development, everything. And so, you know, when we think about children developing in their sleep, actually, newborns, for the first 6 weeks, I generally say to mummies, just go with it. However your little one needs to fall asleep, let them fall asleep that way, because realistically, you're just getting to know each other, you're recovering, so just be kind to everybody, get to know each other. Around 6 weeks, sleep becomes a little bit more organised, that's in relative terms, because newborns are very different sleepers to the rest of children. They spend about half their time in deep sleep and half their time in dream sleep. So the deep sleep is where all their hormones are secreted, they're growing and they're finding out when they're hungry, when they're full, those sorts of things. And then the rest of the time, the other half roughly, is when their brains are organising. So they've all had so much stimulation from the day that their brains are having to organise a lot to what happens. And so around 6 weeks, it becomes ever so slightly more organised. So really before that, all you can do is teach them the difference between night and day. There are more things that you can do, but I think, especially in this country, because we don't need to go back to work so quickly, we perhaps don't need to be as worried as, you know, perhaps in America, parents need to go back up to work at 6 weeks. Around 6 weeks, you can start helping your little one towards their independent sleep skills, practicing, you know, working towards some goals, seeing if they can fall asleep without feeding to sleep or being in the pram. But again, we're not being strict with our newborns because they're very small. But then around, and that's because around 4 months, so between 12 and 16 weeks, they go through what everyone fondly refers to as the four-month sleep regression.
The horror. The idea that sleep can regress, I think, is horrific.
Absolutely. And I think this is probably the only maybe true regression, but it doesn't really regress. It develops. So for babies, it's a massive developmental stage. And what happens is, before this time, they're half the time in deep sleep, half the time in dream sleep. Whereas after that, they develop sleep cycles, which last around 45 minutes to an hour. So they have two stages of light sleep, a stage of deep sleep, and then they go into slightly lighter sleep again where they dream, and then they have a brief awakening. And so if everything's the same as it was when they fell asleep, so they're in their cot and they roll over and go back to sleep again, they don't remember it in the morning. Same as us. But if things are different, so if perhaps they've been fed to sleep or rocked to sleep or something to sleep, when they come to the edge of this, their sleep, after this dreams, they're like, oh gosh, this is bizarre. I'm on the kitchen floor. Something, you know, this is all very different. Quickly, mummy, come and do something to get me back off to sleep again.
Well, like we would be freaked out, I guess,
Absolutely.
Too. If we'd gone to sleep one place and then woken up somewhere else, you'd think, oh, what's happened? I'd cry probably too.
Well, I think I would. And I relate that to, you know, I always explain that to mummies and daddies I work with. You know, we go to sleep with our duvet on our pillow when we fall asleep. Our sleep cycles are slightly longer, about an hour and a half, but we come to the edge of sleep. It's the same sleep cycle, it's just longer. We come to the edge of sleep, and if everything's exactly the same, we roll over, go back to sleep again. We don't remember it in the morning. But yes, if you were to come to the edge of sleep on the kitchen floor, you'd say, oh my gosh, this is bizarre. Someone,
what did I do last
floor.
Night?
What happened? Oh my goodness. Gone are those days where it might be perhaps normal. And so it's the same for your little one. If they've been assisted to sleep in some way, they come to the edge of sleep and they're like, oh my goodness, what on earth has happened? Quick, someone help me get back to sleep again. And I think that's why parents think their sleep has regressed, because if they're coming to the edge of sleep every 45 minutes to an hour, they need help every 45 minutes to an hour. And that's not really what you want in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and that does make sense.
It really does.
And so then that sleep regression happens at about sort of 4 months.
Roughly,
and then
yeah.
Is that something they sort of naturally grow out of or need a bit of help, or how does that work?
I think it depends. If they've, you know, and that's what we do with newborns, if they have been able to practice that independent skill before, so maybe they've had a bit of practice getting to sleep by themselves, maybe, you know, maybe especially if they're second time round, it might be that there's a toddler that needs something, and so they've been, you know, grumbled for a couple of minutes and then been able to get themselves off to sleep again. But I think if they haven't had that practice, it may be that they do find it tricky. And often children, Dr. Mindell, who's an American doctor, estimates that if children get to the age of a year and still have sleep problems, it's probably going to be around 80% of them will still have a problem 3 to 5 years later. So some children, yes, they may be able to get out a bit, but most of the time they definitely need a bit of a helping hand in the right direction.
Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. Mm. And then as they kind of progress beyond, I definitely notice with my children when they started, before they started solids, one of the indicators that maybe they were ready for solids was that they'd been sleeping quite well at night and then they started waking up and they just seemed very, very hungry. Is that sort of normal?
I noticed that with my children. I think it's actually been taken off of one of the accepted ways that children are ready for solids, but it's something that I've definitely noticed with my children. And I do notice sometimes with my clients' children, if they're, you know, if they're very reliant upon milk, and perhaps, you know, if they're perhaps a little bit older, 6-7 months, that then it becomes more obvious that they're waking in the night because they are hungry and need a little bit more than milk to get themselves back off to sleep again.
Okay. And then when they become mobile, so once they start crawling and walking, do you think they sleep better, or is that just again a sort of old wives tale?
I think it can sometimes really upset sleep. I think if they're working on something, if they're working on a developmental stage like crawling or walking, then they almost have this biological urge to practice in the nighttime. But that should really only last a few nights. What I find often is parents say, oh crikey, my little one's awake in the night, quick, we best help them do something. And so that's a lot of the time when people talk about other sleep regressions, perhaps around 8 months or 18 months. Often it's more to do with a developmental stage rather than this, you know, the 4 month one, their sleep is developing in their brain. These I find are more developmental stages, but what's happened is that the parents have then intervened and done something to get the little one back off to sleep again because they think they should be asleep in the middle of the night. And then the little one thinks, well, actually, this is nicer if you're here with me, mummy, or if you're rocking me or something like that. And that's when I find that it's then sleep does regress, but I don't think it's due to necessarily the developmental stage. Yes, that will impact sleep, but only for a few days if the little ones are able to get on with it.
And obviously, you know, sleep for little ones isn't just during the night, it's during the day as well. How important are those daytime naps when it comes to sort of nighttime naps?
So, so important. Basically, if your little one isn't getting the right amount of sleep in the day and at the right times, that's really going to impact nighttime sleep. If your little one's overtired, they're more likely to wake in the night and early in the morning, so, you know, before six. Because there haven't been a huge amounts of studies on this as far as I'm aware, but I think the suggestion is that you've got, the little ones have got too much of the hormones that we don't want. Think they've got too much adrenaline, they've got too much cortisol. And so they're then, that's already built up in their overtiredness because those things are secreted when we're overtired. They have a build-up of those. And so when they come to the early hours of the morning or when they've had too little sleep in the day, that's really going to impact their overnight sleep. They're going to find it harder to get themselves back off to sleep again.
And can too much sleep in the day impact their nighttime sleep?
It can. It really is a bit of a balance. If they have too much sleep in the day, they have an amount of sleep that they need in a 24-hour period. So, you know, for example, a 0 to 3 month old needs around 14 to 17 hours. A 4 to 11 month old needs around 12 to 15 hours. But if they're having, you know, 5 hours of sleep in the day as naps, they're then not going to be able to sleep particularly well overnight because they're having too much sleep in the daytime.
And then obviously they get to the stage where they stop having naps during the day. I mean, they usually, and from my experience, stop kind of between 2 and 3, don't they?
I would generally say about 2.5 to 3. Mm. Every now and again, we get little ones who are able to stop a little bit earlier. But generally, as a rule, between 2.5 and 3.
And then when they drop that sort of afternoon nap, do they need to have, for a little bit more sleep at night? Or do you sort of stick to sort of 12 hours?
They may initially need a little bit more sleep at night because their bodies are adjusting. But then, of course, they're getting a little bit older. And so as they get a little bit older, the amount of sleep that they need reduces slightly. But I always say generally, if people, little ones drop their nap altogether, don't be afraid of bringing bedtime forward. Lots of parents think, well, if I bring bedtime forward to 6, 5, 6, then they're just going to wake earlier. Probably not. If they're overtired, they're more likely to wake earlier. If they've been well rested, then they'll probably carry on sleeping until the time that they were before.
Yeah. And then obviously you've got school-aged children who aren't having naps during the day, but when they start school, that can be quite sort of full on. What does their sleep look like when there's sort of cycles, and how much sleep should they be getting ideally? I mean, it's so difficult because they're not robots, are they? It's not
Absolutely.
Like you can plug in an iPhone and go, it will charge in how many minutes. It's we're humans. Yeah, very, very
totally. If you, the children around 3 to 5, and the National Sleep Foundation guidelines, because children in America have slightly different school ages to us, but around 3 to 5 year olds need around 10 to 13 hours in that 24-hour period. That's probably going to be mostly overnight. And of course, then when children are around 6 to 13, they need about 9 to 11 hours of sleep. But I would say certainly in the 6, 7, 8 categories, they're going to need close to 12 hours. And being conscious as well that school is incredibly stimulating for them, reception, they're starting school. Year one, I think sometimes parents think, it's just, the next year up. But actually, there's a lot of learning that happens in year one, that reception is more play. There's a lot of learning in year one. So that can often be a big stepping stone that parents perhaps don't realise.
And it's the most intense kind of learning, isn't it? When you're at school, it's all these different interactions. It's not like break is a break for them. Mm. A break is kind of even more of an avalanche of learning. So it's such a sort of hyper-stimulated day,
Is. And a lot of sitting still. And as well, for children that aren't used to sitting still, a lot of sitting still learning. And then the break time is learning about social interaction and what's acceptable and who's friends with who, and there's so much going on for them, bless them. So it's really important that they get that sleep so that they can manage all these social interactions in the day as well.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So I'd love to talk a little bit about what to do when your child isn't sleeping. Let's start at the early stages. So what happens if your child isn't sleeping that well? What happens if, let's start with the sort of baby stage. And you sort of said, ideally, they should be sleeping, for a good amount of time at night. You said sort of 14 to 17 hours, didn't you?
Yeah, for newborns. Yeah.
I mean, I remember nights where I remember one night she just literally didn't sleep. She seemed to be up the whole night. And I mean, mean, I couldn't cope. I have no idea how she could cope.
But no.
What is a what is normal? What is not normal in terms of? I mean, presumably it is quite normal to have some really disrupted nights where they are sort of struggling to sleep in those sort of early weeks.
It really is, and also, you know, lots of newborns are born with their nights and day mixed up because often, you know, during the day they've been. Motion, there's a lot of motion because mummy's moving around and they're being, you know, motion. And then often mummies will find that when they sit down or when they lay down and try and go to bed themselves, then there's lots of kicks and the baby almost, you know, wakes up. The feeling is that they do sleep in the womb, but of course they've then got their days and nights mixed up. And also the world is just so incredibly stimulating for them when they're born. You know, when they're in your womb, it's all muffled, it's very quiet, it's a little cocoon for them, and then they're born. And it's just there's lights, the sounds, the smells, everything so stimulating for them. So really in the early weeks, I would generally be saying to mummies, you know, recover, get to know each other. Don't worry too much about what everyone says, you know, you're making a rod for your own back, letting your little one fall asleep on you, all of those sorts of things. Actually, you're really not. You know, before 6 weeks, I would say concentrate on teaching your little one the difference between night and day. So make your daytime feeds nice and light and bright and not too exciting. And be conscious as well, don't put your baby on the playmat every single time, especially when they're newborns, because the whole world is stimulating for them. If you go somewhere new for lunch, that's a whole world of stimulating for them. So don't worry that you have to be stimulating them and teaching them all the time.
Well, they're also, you know, as their eyesight develops, you know, the window they couldn't see yesterday, they can see today. And can you imagine how freaked out we would be?
We're like, goodness.
Oh my God, that was not there yesterday. I mean, it's just...
Look at those colours. I could not see those yesterday.
Like, life for them is like us going to Alton Towers. It is so stimulating. Yeah. Before they have some kind of multicoloured, you know, dingly light up toy shoved in their face.
Exactly. So I think that's really important to remember is that actually the first few weeks are just really stimulating for them without us really having to do very much. So just making sure that their daytime feeds are nice and bright and light and, you know, that sort of thing. And that nighttime is very boring and very dim. You know, I wouldn't necessarily go so far as to say, don't look at your baby, don't give them eye contact, but just try not to, don't make it fun because you're trying to help them learn that this is nighttime. And they don't understand. If you said, well, this is nighttime, they think, well, that's a nice sound. Yeah. You want to just make sure, kind of showing them that actually, yes, it's lovely and I love you very much, but it is time to sleep, so let's be quiet and let's be boring and it's all very dim.
Yeah, I mean, someone said to me once, oh, I read a book and they said, don't have eye contact with your baby when you're trying to put them to sleep. And that seems so cruel to me. And I remember thinking, well, I mean, it's not like they're saying never have eye contact.
Absolutely.
But I guess, you know, eye contact with you, who's the most exciting person in the world for
totally.
them, is a bit like, I don't know, George Clooney walking into the room and sort of suddenly flirting with me. And I'd be like, whoa, yay, I'm going to go to sleep now.
Well, exactly. Why would you? Or even if just your husband was to stare at you the whole time you were trying to fall asleep, you'd be a bit like, what this is all, I'm a bit freaked out here, you're kind of staring at me and it's a bit weird. I'd prefer it if you just, you know, turned over, even if it wasn't George Clooney. So I kind of think that, you know, you are the most important and exciting person for them. So, you know, I'm not saying don't give them eye contact, but don't sort of be stimulating them loads, because that's not what they want in the middle of the night. They just need to go to sleep. So, you know, a tiny bit perhaps, yes, but don't ignore them, but at the same time don't be too exciting for them.
And you talked about, you know, and I think it's so important that the you know, telling them or suggesting to them that it is nighttime, you can't just say it's time to go to sleep now. I definitely found that doing sort of that last feed at night in a darkened room in the same place with the sort of whole bath time routine, that often very quickly became those cues that it was bedtime. And so even though they couldn't understand the words, it's bedtime now, they knew that we went up to have a bath, we had a low light, you know, the last feed was not done in the kitchen with the music on and and that actually made a huge difference to, and I see that in myself, you know, if I've been to a party and then I come home, I need half an hour to wind down.
Definitely.
Rather than straight into bed. And there's kind of keeping those lights low, because we do know that low lighting promotes melatonin production, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, which is technically the hormone of darkness, but it helps our body prepare for sleep. And I always recommend it to parents that we're working with, not necessarily for newborns because they're developing it, they don't have it when they're born, but even for children, you know, 5-6 months old, I suggest dimming the lights, closing the curtains. This time of year, it's not too bad. When I suggest it in the summer, people think I'm a bit crackers. But having a quiet game, and it's something that we do with our own children even now, you know, we'll try and dim the lights, we'll avoid screens, and we have like a little, you know, Lego or Duplo or even building blocks, that sort of thing, kind of trying to create a little calm time before, even before the bedtime routine starts, can be really useful for children because it cues their body, the same as what we should probably all do, but none of us really do we? But we should have like the little calm time before we even start the bedtime routine. But especially with children, you know, under a year, under 10 months, those cues are really good to cue their bodies so that they know, oh, this is about to come. Children like to know where they are, what's coming next. And that bedtime routine is really important.
So a lot of people know the idea of controlled crying. And I think there is a lot of misunderstanding around what sort of leaving your child to cry is. Where do you stand on that? That your child doesn't want to go to bed. You've done this whole sort of, you know, quieting it down bedtime routine, but they're just calling out for you. How do you leave them to cry? How long do you leave them to cry for? Do you go back in and reassure them? How does that work?
I think there is a big misunderstanding, especially about what we do. I think people think either you leave your child to cry for hours or you go straight away and you help them to sleep. And actually what we do is, I suppose, somewhere in the middle, that we support little ones. There's no getting away from it. There will be some communicative crying from them because they're saying, well, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. You would normally do this for me and I would like you to carry on doing that for me. I don't understand why you're not. I'm pretty annoyed right now, so I'd like you to do something for me, please. But what's important is that what the important thing to make sure is, if you are going to do something like that, and often parents who are going to do controlled crying don't call us, because if you're the sort of parent who's happy doing controlled crying, then you're just going to get on with it. And actually, as far as I'm aware, all the studies that I was a solicitor in a previous life, so I'm very evidence-based. And so all the studies, the most recent studies, show that even if you were to do cry it out, that's not going to harm your little one. There's been a couple of recent studies. There was one in 2016 by Michael Gradisar and a number of other experts who showed that, I can read you the abstract, is graduated extinction and fading provided significant sleep benefits above control, but no adverse stress responses or long-term effects on parent-child attachment or child emotions or behaviour, which is pretty clear. And so where we stand on it is, if controlled crying works for you, if you want to, you know, leave your little one to cry, you that's fine, you can get on with that. And like I said, the research that I'm aware of doesn't show that it harms children in any way. If you want to carry on helping your little one sleep every time they need some help to get sleep every hour or so, then absolutely, if that's working for you, go ahead and do that as well. But where we are, like I said, is somewhere in the middle, that there's going to be some protesting, some crying, because they're saying, I don't know what to do. But you're there most of the time, I would say, when we're working with parents, you're there supporting them through that, but you're just not doing it for them.
Because crying, it's so emotive, isn't it? The fact that they're crying. I mean, we would only cry if we're really sad about something. But babies, they're not heartbroken that you've left. They're just, I mean, I remember reading something and they said that there's a theory that babies will often cry themselves to sleep because it's a way of just releasing that extra energy. And it helps them get to sleep, or maybe even providing a bit of white noise to help them get to sleep. So that it could be that they're crying and they don't want you, but then you coming in, they're like, oh, cool. Oh, you're here. Oh, brilliant. You know, it's like that person that
George Clooney's walked in the room again.
Exactly, that person comes into your room the whole time. You're like, just let me sleep.
Yeah. Or, you know, often when I talk to parents about what they're doing, you know, sometimes, you know, they'll say, well, we pat their head and, you know, my baby didn't respond very well to that. And I think, well, if my husband patted my head when I was trying to go to sleep, I'd be like, what are you doing? I'm just trying to get myself to sleep. And, you know, we can say, oh, can you stop what you're doing? It's really annoying me. Or, oh, this is so frustrating, I can't sleep. Or, oh, I must remember to write a note that I need to tell Martin about such and such in the morning. But babies can't do that. They don't think, oh, well, I must remember to tell mummy I don't like carrot. I'll write that on a note. They can just have a bit of a shout about it. They can't talk, especially when children are non-verbal. So a lot of crying isn't necessarily as we would cry when, you know, like you said, heartbroken. It's communicative. It's perhaps saying, I'm a bit frustrated, I'm a bit annoyed, I'm a bit something else. And often mummies that we work with who have said, my little one's never cried, I've always done something to fix whatever I thought with the problem was, have said, actually, it's been really nice to step back and now I can tell the difference, that actually I can tell that what he's doing, he's not crying because he needs something from me, he's crying because he's frustrated that what he's trying to do isn't working. And I think a lot of parenting is almost about that. It's supporting your little one during their learning, but not doing it for them, because otherwise they would never learn the skills that they need to learn.
And what about sleep aids? You know, I know that there are white noise toys. Mm. There are, you know, there's the music on the baby monitor. Mm. People rock their babies to sleep. I mean, I even encountered a cot the other day that sort of swooshed and vibrated to
like
replicate.
A car. Yes.
Exactly. What is your perspective on that? Are they a good thing to use, or...
our perspective is that what you want to do is help your little one sleep without needing anything. White noise can be really useful, especially for newborns, because of course, when we were talking about earlier about the stimulation, white noise can be really helpful to calm them. And, you know, if you live in a very noisy area, a noisy household, you know, if you've got three or four older children who aren't particularly quiet, white noise can be useful for that if you've got noisy neighbours.
Especially if you've got a light sleeper. And there are some children that are just really light sleepers, aren't there?
There are, although I often find that they don't have particularly amazing sleep skills, the little ones who are light sleepers. But of course, we have these sleep cycles, so they spend a good chunk of the time that they're asleep in lighter sleep, because that's how our sleep cycles work. So we recommend white noise if you need to block out sounds, because it's not generally something that little ones rely upon. In relation to everything else, yeah, it probably will work at the time if you have a swooshing cot that kind of acts like a car, but at some point your baby's going to grow out of that swooshing cot, and I don't think there's one that they make for adults. And so at some point you're going to have to teach your little one how to fall asleep independently. So yes, at that immediate moment in time they probably will help, but actually it's just putting off a problem for later.
And do you think sleep becomes harder to learn when they're older? Is it harder to teach a nine-year-old who's sort of always been swooshed to sleep by the special cot to sleep than it would be a nine-day-old?
I would say probably, maybe not a nine-day-old, but, you know, four, five, six months olds are probably one of my favourite ages, because they haven't had months and months and years of being helped to sleep. Whereas if you're 9 years old and you've always been assisted to sleep, it does take a lot longer, because you've got 9 years worth of being assisted to sleep to undo. And also, you know, when you're working with toddlers and preschoolers, they know their own mind, shall we say, slightly more than a 5 or 6 month old. And so sometimes toddlers, you know, it's an amazing age, it's a magical age, but also they are quite tenacious. They're learning, they have some independence and they want to assert that independence, thank you very much, and you will know about it. So, you know, and again, you know, there's probably a couple of years of being assisted to sleep in some way, shape or form before we start working with them. So, you know, I would say probably for me around 5-6 months, if your little one isn't sleeping particularly well, they've had the, you know, inverted commas, 4 month sleep regression, they are cognitively able to sleep, I say through the night, I'm not talking about feeds. Some 5 or 6 month olds need one or two feeds, but that's very different to waking up every hour and needing a feed or something to get back to sleep again.
And then obviously then the big jump once they become a little bit older is going from a cot into a bed, which I remember kind of freaking out about, because you could essentially just, like, you know, child was confined to the cot. Yes. So, you know, A, they couldn't do themselves any harm. B, bedtime really meant bedtime. You shut the door.
Yep.
And luckily, actually, it didn't really happen with mine, but I have so many friends whose children are like, well, brilliant, now I'm free. Yeah. I have no intention of going to bed. And, you know, they pop up in their beds, in their bathrooms, downstairs, and they just don't get, no, I'm not. What do you do in that situation? And is that quite common?
It is, but it's often more common with children who don't have great sleep skills. Parents will often say, well, we thought it would make it better to put her in a bed or put him in a bed. And I say, well, if she hasn't got great sleep skills beforehand, all you're doing is removing, as you said, a barrier to kind of getting out. So we recommend not going into a cot until at the very earliest 2.5 to 3. The only caveat to that, I suppose, is if your little one's getting out of the cot and they're not doing it particularly safely. We do have a blog on how to help little ones stay in their cot for longer, you know, perhaps putting their sleeping bag on backwards so they can't get out of it, and it's a lot harder. But we don't want little ones toppling out of a cot and hurting themselves. But that's probably the only reason I would say consider moving into a bed earlier. If you know, if you need a new cot for your imminent new arrival, get a new cot. Don't take your toddler out of a cot too early just because you need a new cot. You know, all these kind of reasons that people say, oh, you know, we thought it'd be a good idea. If your little one's got great sleep skills, then you can kind of start by introducing perhaps some sleep rules that they need to lay in bed quietly at bedtime, and then perhaps rewards. Little ones of that age generally need the immediate gratification rewards. So first thing in the morning, they can have a sticker or whatever it is that you've decided. But yeah, I would leave it as long as you possibly can, especially if your little one hasn't got great sleep skills, because you're just then creating even more of a problem.
They obviously also can't tell the time.
No.
I remember having one of those clocks that, you know, the sun came up when it was time to wake up and you could set it. I mean, I found that pretty useful.
Yeah.
Do you find that that is a good way of sort of letting, is it kind of empowering them to work out when is
it is? And also it's not fair to kind of say to them, well, you have to stay in bed till morning, but I'm not going to give you any clues as to what morning is, especially at this time of the year when it's quite dark, or even in the middle of the summer when it's, you know, bright sunshine at 5 a.m. So I find those sorts of clocks are really useful. You know, your little one can't tell the time, but they can tell if it's blue or yellow, or you can even turn the blue blue off, because it is, sometimes can be quite bright. So it's either off or it's yellow, in which case it's morning time. And I've used that, you know, those sorts of clocks with all of my children. And as they get older and start to understand their numbers, you don't even have to get one of those clocks. You know, you can have a digital clock where you perhaps tape up the minutes, and you can have, you know, you can get out of bed when it says 6 or when it says 7. And so they understand that when they're a little bit older as well. And it doesn't even have to be that. You don't have to go out and buy anything new. You could perhaps have some, I don't know, fairy lights on a timer, that when the timer, you know, when the fairy lights come on at the end of the bed, then you can get up. All of those sorts of things. But I think it's unfair to expect children to be able to stay in bed until morning if we're not going to give them some clue as to when morning is.
And should we put some books in their cot so that if they do wake up, they've got stuff to read? Or is that encouraging them to wake up early?
Yeah, I would say what we want to avoid is them waking up for anything exciting. So, you know, some parents say, "We, you know, I get exhausted, I bring them into my bed and they have the iPad, or I bring them into my bed for cuddles, or, you know, I'll go and sit in the room, we'll have a bit of quiet time, or, you know, I'll put books in their cot." And actually what we want your little one to do is, if they're waking up really early, then they're potentially not getting quite the right balance of sleep. You know, if they're waking before 6 o'clock, which is generally the earliest that we say is morning, then they probably need something. You need to look at their daytimes and their nighttimes, if they're having the right type of sleep. And I would also say, yeah, we don't want them waking up thinking, "Oh, brilliant, it's my book time and mummy's going to come in and we'll have some nice books and stories." So we want to avoid anything too exciting to even subconsciously create this early morning waking cycle.
Yeah, because ultimately, I mean, I remember when my children were little, the biggest excitement was the iPad. But whenever they woke up really early, I would be like, "Just watch the iPad in my bed while I can sleep." And of course, that's in the short term what I really wanted to do. But then they were like, "Oh, great, if I wake up early, I get to watch the iPad in mummy
in
and
mummy's
daddy's bed
with them. It's all very warm and snuggly, and
of course
it's lovely."
It got earlier and earlier and earlier.
And I think, you know, as a treat, once in a while, if your little ones are old enough to understand, you know, you can say, "Oh, it's Saturday morning. Okay, so okay, as a special treat, you can come in our bed and watch a program or watch the iPad or that sort of thing." And they can understand that it's a bit of a special treat. So if they've got great sleep skills, absolutely, you know, every now and again we'll have breakfast in bed, although I try and not have that too often because I find crumbs in my bed. But, you know, or they'll come in the morning and we'll maybe have a program and watch in bed as a special treat. But everyone knows that's a special treat. Everyone knows that that's not going to happen day after day after day. So that, yeah, absolutely, that can be a really lovely experience. But if you're doing that because your little one's waking too early and they're kind of, that's reinstating, you know, making this early morning waking go on and on and on, you probably need to reconsider what you're doing.
And the whole sleeping in your bed thing, I get. Actually, I was never much of a sort of co-sleeper when they were little, and I found actually that having a baby in my room was really disruptive to my sleep. I just couldn't sleep, and so we very quickly moved them to their in room, but obviously where I could hear them. But I'm now finding it, you know, my children are 8 and 10, it feels like around the corner is the time where they will not want to come and cuddle in my bed, and there's just something so lovely about that. Is that a really bad thing if they occasionally come into my bed?
Not at all, you know. And I think it's really lovely, like I was saying, the odd treat, the odd sleepover. You know, sometimes my oldest two especially will say, "Oh, you know, can I sleep in your bed?" Or sometimes they'll come and sleep in bed until we go to bed, and then we'll put them in their own beds, which is something that I would always tell my clients not to do. But actually, they've got great sleep skills, so the odd treat is not going to undo all of your good work that you've had. And even talking about co-sleeping, if co-sleeping works for you, that's wonderful. If everyone's co-sleeping safely and getting the right amount of sleep, perfect. Lots of people will say, "Oh, you know, you won't like me because I co-sleep." And I'm like, well, if you're doing it safely and everyone's getting enough sleep, that's wonderful. I love that. That's all I want, is for, you know, for everybody, children especially, to get the right amount of sleep. So if you're happy co-sleeping, carry on co-sleeping. That's wonderful. You don't need my help. I'm not here to tell you how you should be living your life and how you should be sleeping. I just want to make sure that everyone's getting the right amount of sleep. So if you do need help, I'm here. If you're all perfectly well and happily getting enough sleep, that's perfect as well.
And I suppose just to cherish those moments and think, well, I deserve this. I've had how many 10 years now of being a kind of this relentless job of being a mother.
Yes.
I think you get to deserve the nits.
Totally.
Even if, I was about to say, even if your child then does give you nits because they've slept in your bed.
Oh, that's a gift that just keeps on giving.
I was thinking today, it is amazing how we seem to have fleas in dogs under control, but not nits in children.
Yeah, it is quite remarkable, actually. Touch wood. I'm now looking for some wood. I say it now. We haven't yet had the delight. I've got everything stocked in the bathroom just in case. I think it's because I have two boys and my oldest. So I think because they've got shorter hair. Yeah. But, you know, I have a little girl who's 3. So I've no doubt that will be coming.
You mentioned, well, I mean, there's a lot in the papers about how we probably all don't quite get enough sleep, us adults, and probably our children. I went to a sort of talk at school, and they were saying, you know, for like year 4, year 5, your kids really probably do need 11, 12 hours of sleep a night. And I think actually a lot of children aren't getting that. Mm. What are the signs of a child who's not getting enough sleep? How might you notice that they might need be needing a bit more sleep? Because it often doesn't manifest itself in the morning.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, sometimes, I mean, I suppose it's a very basic general idea is that they might be a little bit more grumpy, a little bit more irritable. We're all a little less emotionally robust if we're tired. So you might find school drop-offs then become a bit problematic, those sorts of things. Often when we work with school-aged children, school drop-offs or being separated from parents as much more of a bigger deal than it would ordinarily be because they're not quite very emotionally robust. With younger children, you might find that they, or even with children who perhaps shouldn't be napping, they'll fall asleep perhaps on a long car journey. Or if you're in the car at times where it wouldn't ordinarily be their nap times, or, you know, if they're over three, that probably they've cut out their naps, but they then start falling asleep in the car. That suggested that they're not getting the right amount of overnight sleep. Perhaps that they fall asleep much earlier than bedtime. So, you know, if bedtime's normally 7 o'clock and 5:30, you found them, you know, face down in their high chair in their food, that sort of thing. Again, that's a sign that they're not getting enough sleep. Or if you have to wake them on a morning. So if you're constantly having to wake your little one for school on a morning, or even, you know, because you need to go to work and you're having to wake them at a time that you perhaps would expect them to be awake. Again, that's a sign that they're not getting quite enough sleep.
Mm. And what if they're just not going to sleep though before? If you kind of put them to bed earlier, but then they're tossing and turning and then they're still not going to sleep till 9:00, but then at 7:00 the next morning you're having to kind of wrestle them awake. I mean, you just keep persisting?
I think it depends on the age of the child. You know, if your little one's very, very young, then you would start looking at daytime sleep. If they're older, it probably means that it may mean that there's something going on. So if it's a short, you know, if everything had normally been great, and then for a short period of time, something manifests itself at bedtime, you know, often children will have things that they can't get off their mind. So you can try things like Worry Monsters, or the Relax Kids website has some great resources for children to kind of calm their minds before bedtime, a little bit of mindfulness, age-appropriate mindfulness. You can write things down away from the bedtime routine about things that have happened that day or anything they're worried about, and then try and find a solution to that, because, you know, it might seem inconsequential to you, whatever it is that they're worried about. But if for them, with my eldest, I often find his sleep, he struggles to go to sleep if there's something on his mind. And so it's really important to see if you can ascertain what that problem is, to see if that helps. If it's a very long-standing problem, then that's probably the sort of time that you might want to think about speaking to an expert about getting help with your little one's sleep, because it may just be that there's a lot of anxiety around bedtime because they think, well, I can't fall asleep and I don't know how to fall asleep and that sort of thing. And that's kind of what we want to help them with.
Yeah, I mean, someone said to me once, the best way to try and get sleep is to try not to sleep. And actually, it's so true.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily a great sleeper, and I'll very often wake up and get so stressed that I'm not sleeping that my adrenaline levels rise.
Yeah.
And whereas if I just do something else that's not trying to get sleep, then I'll often fall asleep. Just listening to something or reading something in sort of as dark as possible. Mm. I mean, I always find that sort of bedtime story snuggled up in bed is a really nice way to sort of wind down. And
definitely,
and actually my sister says, and I should really do this too, but she tries to spend 10 minutes with each child on their own just before bedtime, just chatting about the day. And the trouble is that I was talking to another friend of mine, and she says that, you know, she puts her daughter down, she has that sort of, you know, 10 minutes with her, and then she puts her down and she's like, mommy, I need to tell you something else. Mommy, I need to one more thing. And she says, you know, obviously I need to be there emotionally for her. It's really important that I listen, but it means that we're not getting to bed till 9:00 because suddenly at 8:00 she's telling me all these things, you know, because, and there is a, I mean, I see it definitely with my daughter. She suddenly has a million things to tell me, which she forgets often by the time she's even remembered them. And part of it is, I want your attention, I want your attention, I want your attention, rather than I've got something burning I need to tell you. How do you deal with that?
What we suggest is kind of in that calm, quiet time before the bedtime routine, that's when you get into the habit of talking to your little one. So that can be a really nice time, depends how many children you have. But, you know, especially if you have a partner that's home for bedtime, you can almost separate off so you can have some one-on-one time, because that's really, really important, especially if there's been a big change, if mommy's gone back to work or there's a new sibling, that sort of thing. That one-on-one time can really be vital and almost a game changer. We want to make sure that children's attention cups are full when they're going to bed, so they're not looking for that attention last thing at night. And we generally say kind of, you know, have that little quiet play that one-on-one child-led play, but also try and deal with all the things that they then want one more of at nighttime. So if they want, you know, maybe a bit of a sleepy snack, a little bit of supper, there's a list of them on our website. But there's things like cherries, there's some dairy, a bowl of yogurt, a bowl of cereal, you know, some toast, some wholemeal toast. And then kind of try and get into the habit, perhaps, you know, talking to them, then doing a little diary or something like that. Or there's a lot of nice books on the market that you can get that you can work through your child's day. Doing that at that time is then going to take it away from the, oh, just one last whatever it is at bedtime. So if you kind of try and deal with everything then that can be a really good habit to get into.
Yeah. Because it is, it's that, I love the idea of the attention cup is full.
Yeah.
It's so hard. I think it's probably where I fail the most or feel like I fail the most.
Oh, no, I think we all do. You know, it's really, really hard to make sure everyone gets enough attention every day. And one-on-one attention is hard as well, especially if, you know, if you're by yourself or, you know, your partner's working away or working late and you're trying to give one-on-one attention to each child. And we generally suggest, you know, about 20 minutes of play with each child one-on-one, uninterrupted, which is near on impossible to, you know, get everyone home from after school club, make sure everyone's got enough food and then fed, watered, bath time, especially if you have children of different ages. I am absolutely there with the rest of the moms. I know that when I'm saying this, it's not easy, but it's just trying to build that into your day to kind of make sure everyone has enough one-on-one time with you so their attention cup is full.
This is why I have such a problem with homework, because I think they've been learning all day long, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. then you send them home at four with more homework, yeah. and it's basically interfering. And anyway, that's a whole different topic. It does
it's probably a whole
nuts.
Other podcast.
Yeah, it is. Do the very broad question. Mm. If we were to talk about kind of golden rules of sleep, and I'm talking more about here, because I do think one of the things that is really important as a parent is to teach your child to sleep well, mm-hmm, if you possibly can.
Yeah.
I mean, is that possible, do you think?
I think it is. Well? I think it's a skill like everything else. I think that's possibly one of the biggest misconceptions that everyone has about sleep, that, oh, it's just so natural. We all do it. Everyone knows how to do it. Your baby will too. But actually, I think it's estimated about a third of the population, the adult population, has a sleep problem in one way, shape or form. And so it's not just natural. We don't all know how to do it. And it's a skill like everything else. So we teach our children to walk, to talk, to cycle, to swim, to everything else, but we can model those things. Whether we notice it or not, we do it every day. We're walking all the time, we're talking all the time, we're feeding ourselves. And so our little ones are seeing what we're doing. You can't really model sleep. And so you definitely need to guide your little one towards sleep. And like I said, I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions, is perhaps that sleep is so natural that it will just come. But I think it is a skill that we need to teach our little
ones.
Because
you're right, I think it's such an important thing. The days that I sleep well, I feel like a different woman. And the days that I sleep terribly, I feel awful. And I mean, people, I was reading something recently and they said that, you know, you can die of lack of sleep. I mean, people develop seriously long-term health problems. So actually teaching your child kind of basic sleep hygiene, that sleep is really important, that you have to prioritize sleep, are all really, really important skills, probably as important as reading and writing.
Perhaps even more so. I think now the Guinness Book of Records have now taken out the possibility of breaking the world record for example, staying awake the longest, because it's too dangerous. You know, you can pretty much launch yourself off a huge bridge and all of those sorts of things. That's not dangerous, but not having enough sleep is. And for children and for adults, it's really, really vital for their health. You know, for children, it reduces their risk of type 2 diabetes, of obesity. Whereas as you get older, it becomes even more important. If Matthew Walker suggests that if you routinely get less than 6 to 7 hours of sleep per night, it doubles your risk of cancer. There's a spike in heart attacks the day after the clocks go forward. When you lose an hour of sleep, there's a spike in heart attacks in hospitals. The reverse is then true for when you get an extra hour of sleep in the autumn. But not getting enough sleep on a regular basis really raises your risk of Alzheimer's, of heart disease, of high blood pressure, heart attacks, heart failure, stroke, diabetes, obesity, you know, the list goes on. It from a very, very basic health point of view, it really is so important. So, you know, for us as adults and children, but from a developmental point of view in children as well, very basically, I suppose, if they're not getting the right amount of sleep at the right time and the right type of sleep, I'm probably showing my age, but back historically when you had computers that you, if you hadn't pressed save and then you closed it down, your work would have disappeared into the, and you'd be like, oh my gosh, I've closed it down, I haven't pressed save. There's going to be loads of people listening to this saying, I don't understand what that means. But that's sort of like how our brains work, that if we don't have, or certainly our children don't have the right type of sleep at the right time, their brains don't press save on what they've been learning that day. So you know, that they're, if they've been practicing walking, talking, crawling, whatever it is, they're not then retaining that practicing. So they're not going to be developing as quickly from a very, very basic point of view. And so often we find children when we've been working with them, I think there's at least two little ones who were toddlers who had speech and language referrals. But actually, by the time we'd finished working with them, about 3 weeks later, they were able to cancel those speech and language referrals because their speech had developed so dramatically because they were getting the right sleep at the right time.
So in terms of sort of golden rules to promote kind of healthy sleep, what would they be?
I would say probably the biggest one is helping your little one to fall asleep independently without reliance upon something, making sure that they are able to fall asleep without you having to rock them or feed them or all of those sorts of things, you know, once they're newborns. If you are thinking of helping guide them towards their independent sleep skills, being consistent, that's really important. Often we speak to parents and they say, we've tried everything. And maybe they have, but they've maybe tried one thing one day and that hasn't worked immediately. So they've tried something else and something else and something else. Whereas what we need to do is make sure that every sleep situation is exactly the same, whether that's naps or bedtime or in the night, because there's no point trying something just at bedtime, because that won't, you know, you need to look at sleep as a whole. So being really consistent. And also, I think if your little one's napping, then be respectful of their naps. Even if, you know, you need to have a nap on the go or that sort of thing, make sure you're respecting their awake times because you don't want them to be overtired. So making sure that they have naps at the right time, which will then set them up really well for bedtime.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, as they get a little bit older, I've found one of the things is allowing enough time for bedtime. So Watchman will go upstairs and be in our pajamas and have our teeth brushed an hour before I want to get them to sleep, because it means that last hour isn't rushed and we have enough time for each other and we could read a story. And it just, I find that makes a big, big, big difference. And the days that it's a little bit later, I always get them to bed much later than I anticipate and that I want.
I think making sure that bedtime isn't rushed. We want it to be a nice, calm affair. And if your little ones have got great sleep skills, the length of the bedtime routine probably isn't too important, especially once they're older. But when they're little, we generally, I would say, aim for about half an hour, especially when they're, you know, under a year, because they've got relatively short wake windows. So we don't want their bedtime routine to be so extended, you know, maybe like a half hour bath and then you kind of go into everything else, because then they're going to get their second wind and then they're going to find it really hard to fall asleep. So, you know, when children are older and they have great sleep skills and, you know, the bedtime routine, that's, it's lovely to have one, but, you know, having it a little bit too long is fine. But when you're helping your little one go to sleep, I would say kind of around half an hour is probably what you want to aim for.
Okay. And there are so many kind of theories bandied around about sort of sleep, and I know that there are a lot of myths. What would you say are the biggest misconceptions about sleep?
Probably something that we mentioned earlier, that, you know, sleep is very natural and it'll just come and it'll be fine and babies know what to do and you should be led by your baby. And actually, no, it's like saying they know what to do in relation to walking or talking or feeding. They don't really have a clue. You know, some, you know, when I'm talking about weaning, you know, they wouldn't know to grab some carrots and get a spoon and feed themselves. And I think that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions. You know, some parents have good sleepers and, you know, we have different types of babies. We have spirited babies, we have angel babies that they're referred to. But I think that's probably the biggest misconception, is that, you know, your baby will know what to do when it comes to sleep, because often they don't.
And how important is that bedtime is always the same time of day?
I would say this at kind of roughly the same time of day, but what's important, especially as your little ones are younger and have naps, that we want to look at awake times rather than the clock time. So whenever we work with parents, I always make sure that they don't look at, you know, have your baby in bed at 7 o'clock every day, because sometimes if your little one's perhaps woken earlier from a nap, they might need to be in bed at 6 or 6:15, no earlier than 6. But making sure that your little one has the right awake time is really, really important. So, you know, if your little one is, you know, 5, 6 months old and have woken from a nap at 2 and then, you know, won't then nap until for the rest of the afternoon, you need to bring bedtime forward. If your little one's woken at 4 from a nap, you're not going to be able to put them down the same time as you would if they woke at 3 from a nap. So making sure that their awake times are right is really important for them.
Okay. Are you a good sleeper?
I am. Yes.
Have you always been a good sleeper?
I think I have. I didn't sleep particularly well when I was pregnant, but I think that was just more uncomfortableness, if that's even a word, and just trying to get comfortable. But yes, I need my sleep. I'm quite grumpy without my sleep.
I'm the same. I'm a different person when I've slept well.
Absolutely.
Jenna, thank you so much for coming along today. You've talked a lot about how you support individual families. Just tell us a little bit about how you support them.
So we work often with one-on-one with families. So what would happen is we have an initial free chat just to make sure that everyone's on the same page, that parents can answer and ask any questions that they've got about how we work and that sort of thing. And then if we both think that we're a great fit, then we would send a questionnaire out to the parents in relation to their little one. It's about 60 questions, mostly about the child, but a little bit about the parenting style, that sort of thing. And then they send that back to us, and then we prepare a questionnaire, a sleep plan, that's just for their little one based upon the questionnaire. So yes, we can use similar principles for children of different ages, but exactly what we do and how we structure the plan, we talk about everything. We talk about nighttime, we talk about bedtime, we talk about naps, we talk about routines, we talk about daylight, we talk about food, everything that impacts on sleep we talk about. And then we meet with the families. We can work via Skype, so we've worked with lots of families who live abroad. If they're local, we'll go and see them. And if the children are over three, then we'd also meet with the children in an age-appropriate way and talk to them. And then we support everybody in relation to the sleep. So we have phone calls and emails with parents. And if the children are older, we then have FaceTimes or little videos so that the children can kind of take responsibility for what they're doing and a bit of ownership. And we also have sleep logs that parents fill in daily, and we check those sleep logs daily to make sure that we're making the sleep as bespoke as possible for their child, because, you know, everyone has different sleep needs. So we want to make sure that we're making it as bespoke as possible for that little one.
Perfect. And where can people find out more about what you do?
So we're Little Dreams Consulting. Our website is www.littledreamsconsulting.com. We're also on Facebook under that name, and Instagram, Little Dreams Consulting Limited, LTD. And they're very welcome to have a look. All the information is on there. What's included in the packages, the prices, everything is on there. So there's nothing hidden. There's never any hidden charges or you need extra this or extra that. Everything is included in the price.
Perfect. Fantastic. And you mentioned you've got a blog too, so people that, you know, interested in hearing a little bit more about sleep can always have a look. And presumably that's on your website.
It is. It's on the website. There's a lot of extra information as well we have from other experts that we ask to blog for us. So, you know, how to put on a 5-minute soft play face of makeup, to how to introduce your dogs to your new babies, those sorts of things. So we have a lot about sleep, how to manage holidays, time differences, all of those sorts of things, but a lot of other things as well.
Oh my gosh. So many more questions for you, Jenna. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much. I've really, really enjoyed chatting to you, and it's really inspired me to kind of get better sleep actually for me rather than anyone else.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for having me. I've had a lovely time.
Good. Thank you. And thank you all for listening to another episode of The Parenthood. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate and review us wherever you've downloaded this podcast. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm at marina.fogel. But in the meantime, from Jenna and me, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.